most of you will know that a while back I started a short, or should I say one, series on selections from Genesis. And tonight is our third episode on the life of Abraham. And the main focus of our attention is Genesis chapter 22, which I'm now going to read. So I'm reading from Genesis chapter 22 and verse 1. After these things, God tested Abraham and said to him, "Abraham." And he said, "Here I am." He said, "Take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah, and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I shall tell you." So Abraham rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, and took two of his young men with him, and his son Isaac. And he cut the wood for the burnt offering, and arose and went to the place of which God had told him. On the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place from afar. Then Abraham said to his young men, "Stay here with the donkey. I and the boy will go over there and worship and come again to you." And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac his son. And he took in his hand the fire and the knife. So they went both of them together. And Isaac said to his father Abraham, "My father." And he said, "Here I am, your son, my son." He said, "Behold the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering?" Abraham said, "God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering, my son." So they went both of them together. When they came to the place of which God had told him, Abraham built the altar there and laid the wood in order and bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Then Abraham reached out his hand and took the knife to slaughter his son. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, "Abraham, Abraham." And he said, "Here I am." He said, "Do not lay your hand on the boy, or do anything to him. For now I know that you fear God, seeing you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me." And Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him was a ram caught in a thicket by his horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered it up as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called the name of that place, "The Lord will provide." As it is said to this day, "On the mount of the Lord it shall be provided." And the angel of the Lord called to Abraham a second time from heaven and said, "By myself I have sworn, declares the Lord, because you have done this and have not withheld your son, your only son, I will surely bless you, and I will surely multiply your offspring as the stars of heaven, and as the sand that is on the seashore. And your offspring shall possess the gate of his enemies, and in your offspring shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because you have obeyed my voice." So Abraham returned to his young men, and they arose and went together to Beersheba, and Abraham lived at Beersheba. Now after these things it was told to Abraham, "Behold, Milcah has also borne children to your brother Nahor, Uz his firstborn, Buz his brother, Kemuel the father of Aram, Chesed, Hazo, Pildash, Jidlaf, and Bethuel. Bethuel fathered Rebekah. These eight Milcah brought to Nahor, Abraham's brother. Moreover, his concubine, whose name was Ruma, bore Teba, Gaham, Tahash and Maacah. As you will recall, the Lord made two promises to Abraham. Firstly, when the Lord first called Abraham to leave Ur of the Chaldees back in Genesis 12, in verse 2 he said, "And I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great, so that you will be a blessing." Secondly, when he reached the land of Canaan, in Genesis 15, verse 7, we read, "I am the Lord who brought you out from Ur of the Chaldeans to give you this land to possess." Last time, we mentioned how, in their old age, Abraham and his wife Sarah had conspired to fulfill the first of the promises in their own way. Since Sarah was in her 70s and barren, she decided to give her servant Hagar to Abraham so that he may have offspring. And as a result, Ishmael was born. We looked at how the Lord renewed his covenant with Abraham in the covenant of circumcision in Genesis 17. And furthermore,
God revealed that he had his own plan for how he would fulfill his first promise. In Genesis 17, verse 19, God said, "No, but Sarah, your wife, shall bear you a son, and you shall call his name Isaac. I will establish my covenant with him as an everlasting covenant from his offspring after him." Apparently, Isaac means "he will laugh." And by this time, Abraham was 99 years old and Sarah 90. And the promise was that Isaac would be born a year later. Sarah's response was to laugh through unbelief. In chapter 21, which Jane kindly read for us earlier, Isaac is born at the appointed time. And then we have the somewhat shameful treatment of Ishmael. Abraham was known for the faith he had in God. He believed God's promise to give him and his barren wife a son, and God miraculously did this when Abraham was 100 and Sarah was 90 years old. Abraham's faith in God was therefore vindicated, and all hopes of having a multitude of descendants were now going to be fulfilled, as Isaac would then grow up, get married, have his own children. We can imagine how lovingly Abraham and Sarah must have doted on their precious son. This was their son, their precious miraculous son, who was their great hope and their future. But God makes an unexpected demand. We are not told how old Isaac is when the events of Genesis 22 take place. We know that he's old enough to talk and to carry the wood, and yet he's referred to as a boy in verse 12. It's astounding that God should make this demand of Abraham. We can only imagine the great shock that Abraham might have felt when he heard it. Nowhere else in Scripture does the one true God, the God of the Bible, call for human sacrifice. It is a practice among some heathen religions, particularly Molech, the god of the Ammonites from the land of Canaan, whose practices are described as detestable and as abominations. This is a difficult passage. How did a story of human sacrifice get into the Bible? How could God order the sacrifice of Isaac, the son for whom Abraham and Sarah had waited for so long, the son of their old age, the gift from God who would be his heir in accordance with the Lord's promise? And none of us want to take a human life, Most of people would agonize if required to throw an executioner's switch. Taking the life of your own child would be unthinkable. We don't want God to order Abraham to sacrifice Isaac. Our hearts rebel against such an idea. We are repulsed by this story and by a God who would make such a demand. And how could Abraham go through with it? This isn't so much a story about human sacrifice as one of trust. God had promised Abraham that it was through Isaac that his offspring would become the great nation that God had said. Abraham trusted God completely that God will fulfill that promise. We read something of an explanation in Hebrews chapter 11, where in verses 17 through to 19 it says, "By faith Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises was in the act of offering up his only son, of whom it was said, 'Through Isaac shall your offspring be named.' He considered that God was able even to raise him from the dead, from which, figuratively speaking, he did receive him back." Verse 1 says, "After these things, God tested Abraham and said to him, 'Abraham,' and he said, 'Here I am.'" That's what the episode is about. It's about the test of Abraham's faith. One thing to understand about this story is the world in which Abraham lived. The tribes among whom Abraham lived practiced human sacrifice. For example, the Ammonites that I mentioned earlier. Abraham had neighbours who sacrificed children to a pagan god. If they could make such a sacrifice, how could Abraham, who worshipped the true God, do less when asked to do so? He must have felt a terrible pull to demonstrate his love for God as dramatically as his pagan neighbours had done. But this sacrifice was more terrible than other sacrifices. Abraham and Sarah had only one son, and they had waited so long for him. Of course, this was not Abraham's only son. I mentioned earlier how Abraham and Sarah had conspired to have a child by Hagar, Sarah's servant. Then Abraham had effectively lost Ishmael, his son, in chapter 21. And now he was about to lose Isaac, his second and last son. But this is not, in fact, a story about human sacrifice. It is, in fact, the opposite. Abraham was called to sacrifice Isaac, but it's a story about God stopping Abraham from going through with that sacrifice. God did not want a human sacrifice, and he never intended it to take place. Either Abraham would refuse the request, or he would agree to it, and God would provide a way out. What are we to make of this test? Isn't it cruel for God to test Abraham in this way? Perhaps Abraham might even have wondered if he'd heard God correctly and said, "Lord, are you really telling me to take Isaac and offer him as a burnt offering? But surely that would mean that Isaac would have to die. I don't understand this. I thought that Isaac is the son you promised to give me, and through him your promise to grant me a multitude of descendants would be fulfilled." The Bible doesn't record any response from Abraham to this commandment except one: complete obedience. Some of us may be tempted to react to this by complaining that God's command is too cruel, inhumane and unreasonable to carry out. How can God tell me to do that? He is not fair. He obviously does not love me, nor my son. He's a bloodthirsty God who's absolutely insensitive to the agony and death of his own people. Have you sometimes felt that way when things did not go very well for you? Have you sometimes questioned God or doubted his goodness in allowing you to experience loss or pain? Well, please understand that such a response is not one of faith. It's the response of doubt and unbelief, which is the very opposite of faith. Faith is confident that God is always good, righteous, fair, just and loving, no matter what he does. And this was true in Abraham's situation as well. God's word clearly reveals that God is not unreasonable, cruel, or bloodthirsty. He's most gracious and merciful. He hates any kind of human blood sacrifice. In fact, when God gave his laws to Israel in the time of Moses, one of the prohibitions was against human blood sacrifice. For example, in Deuteronomy chapter 12, and verse 31. Why did God command Abraham to sacrifice his son if he's so firmly against human sacrifice? Was he contradicting himself? No, he was not. The command was meant only to test the faith of Abraham. And Abraham passed the test very well, with unquestioning obedience. Verse 3 of chapter 22. So Abraham rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, and took two of his young men with him, and his son Isaac. And he cut the wood for the burnt offering, and arose, and went to the place of which God had told him. That was Abraham's response. Actually, such absolute trust in God, such absolute devotion to him, is what is required if we're to come to him for salvation. Jesus said in Matthew 22, verse 37, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind." Now, if you don't think about it too deeply, it might not seem too much. However, he puts it more starkly in Luke 14:26 when he says, "If anyone comes to me and does not hate his own father and mother and wife and children and brothers and sisters, yes, and even his own life, he cannot be my disciple." What Jesus demands is an absolute love. If we want to love him, we must do so above everything else, with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. Through this test, Abraham was able to demonstrate his absolute trust and devotion to the Lord, and in a much more meaningful way than would have been possible without the test. How should we react to a similar test? How would we have responded if we had been in Abraham's place? This was clearly the greatest faith crisis he had ever had to face in his life. How would we cope if we were the one facing this crisis? What is most remarkable about the test is that it seems to be, at first sight, in direct conflict with what was, up to that point, the revealed will of God. God had said that from Abraham would come a great nation, and that would be through his son Isaac. To sacrifice Isaac would seem to cut across that plan, although Abraham's reasoning is revealed to us in Hebrews 11. It must be pointed out, however, that God spoke directly with Abraham on a number of occasions, including this one. We must be very careful about going against the revealed will of God. At that time, God's revelation was far from complete. Now that Scripture has been completed, all that will be revealed has already been revealed, except that which we currently only see in part, will be fully revealed at the end of time. We may not be subject to the same test as Abraham, but we should all expect our faith to be tested, perhaps even through the loss of a loved one, even a child. But faith is strengthened through testing. James chapter 1 says in verse 2 to 4, "Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness, and let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing." We cannot leave this event of Abraham being willing to sacrifice his beloved son without thinking about the God who was also willing to sacrifice his only beloved son. There are some differences which must be noted. First, not only was God the Father willing to sacrifice the Son, but the Son himself, Jesus Christ, was also willing to be the sacrifice. He didn't want to do it, but out of obedience he submitted to his Father's will. Jesus said in Luke 22, verse 42, "Father, if you are willing, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done." Secondly, the sacrifice actually took place. Thirdly, there was no alternative that would have sufficed. Quotation I've just read from Luke, "Remove this cup from me." As the hymn writer puts it, there was no other good enough to pay the price of sin. He only could unlock the gate of heaven and let us in. God did provide for himself a lamb without spot, and that lamb was his own son, Jesus Christ. We're not told the purpose of Abraham's sacrifice of Isaac. We know the purpose of the test, but not of the sacrifice, which did not actually take place. However, we do know the purpose of Christ's death on the cross. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 18 says, "For Christ also suffered once for sins, the righteous for the unrighteous, that he might bring us to God, being put to death in the flesh, but made alive in the spirit." So what are the lessons about faith that we can learn from Abraham? I think there are four. Firstly, we can learn that the reason why we need to have faith in God in any crisis or difficulty is our incomplete knowledge of God's plan. God does not require us to know every single detail before we obey him. There are many things he has chosen not to reveal to us yet, but he wants us simply to trust him. And in every crisis we face, we must believe that God has a good purpose for whatever he does and for whatever he allows to happen in our lives. Romans 8:28 assures us that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are called according to his purpose. We ought to realise that the trials we face have a divine purpose. They are not there merely by chance or accident, but by God's design. They have all been carefully planned and deliberately woven into the fabric of our lives for his glory. Thus we should humbly submit ourselves to whatever trial or testing that the Lord puts us through, just like Abraham did. Friends, are you facing a trial at present in which you are greatly perplexed? Do you wonder why God is allowing this to happen to you? Please be aware that there are things being accomplished that you do not know about, and that this gives you an opportunity to trust him for the things you do not know. The second lesson about faith that we can learn is that faith obediently submits to God's will. Abraham obviously loved Isaac very much, but to him, obedience to God's will was even more important than loving his own son Isaac. Faith makes us willing to give or offer up anything God requires from us, even the things that may be most precious to us. Faith must make us willing to surrender all and to abandon all that we have to God. It acknowledges that our lives and all that we have are not our own anymore, but God's, to shape and to use in the way he wants to. In short, our faith must be a faith that makes him fully Lord of our lives. God must be made Lord of all, or else he will not be Lord at all. If the Lord should require you to give up something very precious to you for his sake, would you submit obediently to him? Or would you withdraw and go away sad like the rich young ruler? Remember that God's requirements are not designed to deprive you or destroy you, but to bless you. Thus, the third lesson about faith that we can learn is that faith confidently depends upon God's power and provision. Although we do not know all that Abraham felt and thought as he was preparing to offer Isaac, we have two important clues in the passage. The first is found in the reply that he gave to Isaac's question in verse 7. In verse 7, Isaac innocently asked him, "Behold the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering?" And Abraham's reply was, "God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering, my son." Let us not think that Abraham was telling Isaac a lie here. The truth of the matter was that if God had commanded that Isaac is to be sacrificed, then Isaac must be the lamb that God has provided. But of greater significance here is the confidence expressed here by Abraham that God will provide. This shows Abraham's faith in God's unfailing provision. The other clue to Abraham's thoughts is found in Hebrews 11, verse 19, which says, "He considered that God was able to raise him from the dead." Abraham really had no doubts at all about God's unlimited power. He can do anything if he wants to. He can even resurrect the dead body of Isaac back to life. But it turned out that God did not choose to do that, but to provide a ram as a substitute to be sacrificed. In the same way that Abraham depended on God's unfailing provision and power, we too need to depend on his unfailing provision and power when we meet with adversities in life. We must believe that God will provide whatever is needed. If we suffer any loss, we must believe that God will either significantly provide and return whatever it is we have lost, as he did for Job, or that God will provide us with sufficient grace to bear the loss, as he did for Paul. But in whatever way God provides, the fact remains that he will provide. And in any crisis, we must have firm confidence that God can do anything that he wills to do. It is well within his power to raise the dead back to life if he wants to, or to remove all traces of cancer, or to provide timely material and financial help, or to change the heart of an estranged spouse or a prodigal child. The Lord can provide, and he will provide, whether by miracle or by ordinary means, whether by life or by death, whether by deliverance or by suffering, whether by gain or by loss. And when we go through any trial, we should confidently say, "I do not know how the Lord will provide, and I do not know what the Lord will provide, but this one thing I know by faith, the Lord will provide." Friends, perhaps your faith is being severely tested right now. Trust in God's provision and power, for when you do that, you will find benefits and blessing. This leads us to the fourth lesson that we can learn from Abraham's faith. Our faith benefits by being manifested proven and refined through crises. This is seen in the response that God gave to Abraham's unquestioning obedience in verse 12. Lay not thine hand upon the lad, neither do thou anything unto him. For now I know that thou fearest God, seeing thou hast not withheld thy son, thine own son, from me. This verse reveals the hidden purpose of God for the strange command he had given to Abraham. It was designed to prove Abraham's love and devotion to God. In the process, it also proved Abraham's faith, since the writer of Hebrews stated plainly that Abraham offered up Isaac by faith. Abraham's faith was precious to God. And it was God's plan that Abraham's faith should be fully revealed and refined, not for God to see, because God already knows about it, being omniscient, but for Abraham and all his descendants to learn from, including us, who are his spiritual descendants. The only way in which this could happen was by putting Abraham through this severe trial. The same thing's true about our trials. They are placed in our lives by God to reveal our faith and to refine our faith. If you feel that your faith in God is not strong enough and you pray, O Lord, please strengthen my faith, then be prepared to face some trials and crises. God uses them to accomplish his mighty work of changing our lives. By putting us through them, he refines our faith. We become like Christ. We develop virtues. We become less and less dependent upon ourselves and more dependent upon God. Through trials, we become better than we were before, and so we endure them patiently and willingly. We endure them now with better understanding and with greater trust in God, who lovingly brought these trials into our lives. So we have learned four important lessons from Abraham about having faith in times of testing. 1. We need faith because of our incomplete knowledge of God's plan for us. 2. We express faith by submitting ourselves to God's will. 3. We exercise faith by depending confidently upon God's provision and power in times of adversity. And 4. Our faith benefits by being manifested, proven, and refined through times of adversity. Amen.